1039 1450 WKXL NHTalkRadio.com. It's another edition of Feldis and Kale, and we are presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And Weed Family Automotive, they have been serving Concord area families' car care needs since 1995. You can call them at 603-225-7988, online at weedfamilyautomotive.com, located at 124 Store Street in Concord. Dan, all set to go once again?
Fired up, ready to go.
Shoulder feeling better?
It feels great.
Feels good. Great. All right, feeling good.
On the path to recovery.
There you go. And joining us today on Feldis and Kale, a man you know very well, Dan Feldis, Nick Taylor of Manchester. Nick served as Senator Feldis's campaign manager in the last election and was previously the policy director in the New Hampshire State Senate. And Nick Taylor, we welcome you to Feldis and Kale. Great to have you with us.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me on. I'm happy to be here.
Well, thanks so much, Nick, for jumping on. And you know, look, I think that I've met a lot of people, Ken, and throughout politics and public policy and the law, I can honestly say there's no one smarter, more effective, better at his job, diplomatic, digging into the details, complicated public policy matters, dealing with the politics, dealing with strategy, than Nick Taylor. And I, you know, it's just great to have him on the show. And Nick's done tremendous work over the years, including at the State House as a majority policy director. Nick, I don't think a lot of folks know all the work that goes into issues large and small at the State House, from the budget to your run-of-the-mill piece of legislation. Can you talk a little bit about that experience and the work that you did at the State House serving the people of the state of New Hampshire?
Yeah, absolutely. And first off, Dan, thanks for that really wonderful introduction. It feels mutual. I mean, watching you dig into stuff at the State House and on the campaign trail, the hours you put in, the ability to digest complex topics and put it in a way that people can understand it and everyday people can learn and listen and serve. But I spent a lot of time learning and listening from you. So certainly that feeling is mutual there. So to your question about digging into the State House, I think there's a lot of folks out there that you see the headlines and you kind of think it's all politics. It's all, bills are written by someone else and you're just, going through the motions there. And I could say, that's absolutely not the case. And so much of what I learned and loved working at the State House is that there are often many, many bills that were not partisan, and that we were just diving into issues to help the people of New Hampshire, and that you can get people into a room who may disagree on everything else under the sun, but you got people into the room who had a common goal on a bill, and you can sit them down and say, how do we get to yes? How do we get this across the finish line? And the amount of work that goes in from, the nonpartisan staff who are working on the budget or the attorneys who are drafting the bills to the clerk's office who are putting out the calendars and making, the session and state government work there is truly incredible. So, I would just say for people that are looking to get involved, whether you show up and listen to a hearing, call your state legislator, it makes a huge difference. And this is just, I think New Hampshire does it best with our really accessible, really direct democracy State House there. So I learned a ton. I think you can make a huge impact, and it really does start to check the politics at the door and get down and get to work, which is truly what it should be all about.
And so, looking at the work that we did, what are some of the issues that we worked on that we got across the finish line that you're most proud of?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, I think one of the things that always stands out to me is the work that ended up being done on the state budget. And Governor Sununu had vetoed the budget, and there was, battles all throughout the summer. But there was a lot of really good stuff in there. There was a ton of education funding. There was funding for caseworkers at DCYS so that we could start to deal with the crisis that's going on over there. And we were able to send money directly back to these cities and towns to be able to make real investments in their own communities. And to see how that worked, and yeah, absolutely, there were stuff that was contentious there that we didn't agree with, but there was a lot of really good stuff that went back to the communities, and this is sort of the budget from a couple years back here, but that made a huge difference. I think digging into some of the Children's Mobile Health Crisis mobile clinics there, listening to the testimony, and that was an issue that, I'll be honest, I dove into the state house stuff I didn't know much about. I didn't know that too often when you had children in crisis that they were being handcuffed or being subdued in a way that was not going to be helpful and was going to potentially have long-term impacts. And diving in there and learning from you and learning from now Senator Becky Whitley and just hearing from people there about what this policy can make a huge difference in their lives, that was something that ultimately when we passed that and funded in the budget, I was incredibly proud to be a small piece of that. Again, because that was an issue that going in, I didn't know anything about. And so to see the impact that could make, that we could make on people's lives, and obviously it took some time to try and get that stood up there, but it was definitely a real game changer for people when we were able to pass it and start to do something different here, because what we were doing wasn't working.
And Nick, you mentioned the importance of checking your politics or your party affiliation at the door, which I think, by and large, New Hampshire does as well, if not better, than most states. But are you concerned at all with the direction of the Democratic Party nationally? Not so much in this state, but nationally.
No, I'm not. I think there's you kind of get to a level where you need people that want to work with you, right? And I think at the state house we still have that. We still have people that can say, look, I'm a Democrat, you're a Republican, but we both care about this issue, and let's sit down and get in the room and do it. And quite frankly, I think that doesn't happen as much in D.C. And there's, whether it's gerrymandering that pushes people to be more worried about a primary opponent than a general election opponent, or whether it's just the national money that has come in and basically said you can't compromise, you can't be with us on 75% and against us on 25% because we don't want you. We'll go find someone else who will be with us 100%. And I think we don't quite have that here in New Hampshire, but I do think it is a problem down in D.C. And you look at some of the stuff that's going on, and you actually put it in front of the people. They love it. It's incredibly popular. And so I think, looking at this, the reconciliation package that's making its way through right now, when you actually put this stuff the voters of New Hampshire, and you say, do you want investments in long-term care? Do you want investments in clean energy? Do you want to shore up the exchange, so lower healthcare premiums? They all, it's yes, it's overwhelmingly yes. And quite frankly, even when you look at the revenue piece of this around how we pay for this, and you say, if people are making over, if you're a billionaire and your investments aren't taxed, you want them taxed to pay for this? Yeah, absolutely. And the polling backs that up. It's, in New Hampshire, it's like high 60s, 68, 67 percent of people say, yes, I do want that. And they hear how it's paid for, and they actually like the policy even better because it's not going to raise the dime of taxes on people making less than $400,000, and it's actually going to cut some small business taxes if some of the provisions stick in there. So, I think New Hampshire does it great. I think that's a problem nationally, but it's an issue that we really got to deal with, and use some of that kind of common sense we got up here to get back to work for the people.
And Nick, you mentioned something I think that's critically important part of paying for whatever it is you're proposing, and the Build Back Better agenda, reconciliation package, as you mentioned, makes those at the very top pay their fair share, large multinational corporations, along with folks making over $400,000 a year will pay more, especially if you're a billionaire, you would pay more of your fair share. But those making under $400,000 a year wouldn't pay more. In fact, they get tax cuts, and so would small businesses. And in fact, in the state budget 3 years ago, we closed loopholes for multinational corporations, invested in the middle class, invested in property tax relief. And I think it's important to put a pin on how important it is to not just pay for what you're suggesting, but also the popularity in New Hampshire. Can you talk more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I do think it's one of those things where people are used to hearing, you know, campaign promises that either never get implemented or just aren't real, aren't real policy too. And they worry. They say, look, I love that idea, but who's going to pay for it? Is it going to be me? Because normally, quite frankly, I think a lot of people in the middle and working class are used to being beaten by lobbyists and those at the top who can influence policy. And so I think when you start to hear about these things that people have loved for a long time and how they're paid for, I think that makes a huge difference. And, you know, there was a proposal recently from Senator Wyden, who's the chair of the Senate Finance Committee, a senator from Oregon, U.S. senator, and he put out this billionaire's income tax, is what he called it. And what it does is it closes this loophole for people that are making money on their investments, their stocks and whatnot. If you make over $1 billion, if you make $1 billion, you have over a billion invested, and you're actually making that $1 billion, then you pay a tax. You pay a tax, like an income tax, like the rest of us. And I think some of these ideas around wealth taxes and what have you are they sound so new and so foreign, but the reality is most of us, we pay a tax on our biggest asset, our house. Right, and so like every year they go around, and you get your, well, not even every year, but more frequently than that, you get your property tax assessed. They're taxing your biggest asset, and for some of these people at the top, their biggest asset isn't their house; it's their investments. And so we just have a tax code that, in my opinion, is just not written for the current day. It was written for decades past when people did. They had their house and they had their income and they worked one job and Amazon didn't exist and it was a real robust middle class. So I think we definitely need to upgrade things. We're not living in that world anymore, and make things work for people, for how our society is nowadays. And then I think you kind of go back to that is that like when you tell people what you're doing and you be honest with them and you say this is how we're going to pay for it and this is what we're going to do, it's incredibly popular. It's again like it's in the 60s. In terms of support, and very little is up there in the high 60s, low 70s in terms of support for anything nowadays, right? And so you talk about this, and there's things people care about. They want a straight shot. They want to hear what you're going to do, and if you actually tell them and you say, hey, this is what we're going to do, then you got to keep your word and you got to do it. But the people in New Hampshire support it based on all the public polling.
Yeah, I think everybody is in favor of the infrastructure bill, the $1.5 trillion infrastructure bill. Everybody wants better roads, better bridges, better public transportation, even better internet access in rural areas where they probably don't have it or have much of it. But when you get to the social issues, that's, I think, where you're going to get a divide among a lot of people, even in New Hampshire. I mean, the infrastructure stuff is great, but when it comes to the social aspect of this Build Back Better bill, that's when I think people turtle a little bit and aren't really that fond of it.
Ken, what's the just to be clear, what's the social aspects that of the bill?
Well, I'm talking about all the aspects in there that help, with daycare, with everything else that's in there, and free education, free community college education for illegals, for immigrants. Really, that doesn't set too well with a lot of people. It doesn't. Let's face it. It does not.
I think when you sort of start to break down some individual aspects of the Build Back Better agenda, a lot of them still retain that popularity. I mean, like the universal pre-K, paid family and medical leave, the child tax credit. I mean, there's a lot of stuff there that, when you break it down and you say, hey, here's an individual piece of this. Like, let's talk about this individual one. And they're really resilient. These policies will hold up even against the negative attacks. And so, I think part of it is that we've really neglected to invest in our society for so long. There's been years and years and years here of really just deadlocked politics in Washington. And it's not that people are sitting around and can't compromise. It's, or, or, well, they won't compromise. It's not like they're not trying, right? I mean, someone should be, these are things that, you know, it's too bad that they have to be all put into to one bill, because there's no reason that we should be needing to bring children out of poverty with the child tax credit, invest in pre-K, invest in our community colleges. You know, this shouldn't have to be one bill, but the reality is it's been a long time since we've really, like I said, kind of adjusted our society for the world that we live in today. And I mean, look at the child care. I mean, it's so expensive nowadays for people. You have parents, you see all these help wanted signs dotting storefronts everywhere, and it has nothing to do with unemployment insurance or some of this other stuff. It's just, you know, people need to take care of their kids, right? And especially with COVID shutting down schools every once in a while and the flexibility there. But you try and send your kids to child care, and it's for some of these, you know, lower income families, you're spending 100% of what you would make at your job on child care. And that's just, you know, if we're going to bring people into our workforce, we can't, you know, it can't be a losing proposition to send your kid to child care, because then, you know, why are you going to, it doesn't just make financial sense to go to work, right? I mean, and so, you know, we really, in my opinion, we need to adjust the way the rules are here and the policies that, you know, we do have two-income households now. We do have, you know, single-parent households. We do have, you know, because of the opioid crisis, grandparents taking care of their kids or their grandchildren here. And so it's like, you know, if we're not going to adjust the rules and the policies to work in a society that we currently live in, and we just haven't done that for so long. And, you know, I think that's one of the, to me, that's one of the big promises of the current agenda that's working its way through, is that we will finally adjust our policies to the current times and the realities that people face nowadays, because, again, they're not the same as when, quite frankly, a lot of the legislators came down to D.C. in the first place. You have these people that have been there for 20, 30 years, and, you know, things have changed.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I think that, you know, just to use the sitcom analogy, you know, we got a Leave It to Beaver approach in a modern-day family economy, and we need to help working families and people struggling, whether it's access to affordable, quality child care, paid family and medical leave insurance, the kinds of things that really, you know, working families are struggling, especially in COVID, and just one hit here or there can put them out of the labor market, can set them back years. And so I think, Nick, you put a pin on that. Just switching gears pretty significantly, Yankees at Red Sox tonight. Nick, what do you think?
That is a significant switch.
That is a pretty
or shift. Yes.
Hey, we gotta go with the Red Sox. I mean, they're giving us all a little you know, heart attacks on a regular basis here at the highs and the lows here. You start to feel good. I finally got back to Fenway Park 2 weeks ago for when the Orioles were in the homestand. It's been a long time since I've been there, and it's been great, right? I think it would be an 8-3 or something like that. And then you're watching the rest of the week, and it's giving flashbacks to you know, the chicken and beer years there of that great September collapse.
Oh, yeah. We all remember that all too well. No doubt about that. But it should be a good one. At Fenway, I was hoping, however, I was hoping for a little bit more chaos. I was hoping for a four-way tie to see how that would play out. Yeah.
That would have been interesting.
Yeah, I like the chaos.
The A's and the B teams play the C team, and people are moving around the country there. It was looking pretty funky.
Well, Nick, I know you speak from some experience, because you were a Continental at Hamilton College and on the baseball team.
Yep. We turned some stuff around there in the NESCAC. But it's a Division III baseball. It's a great time. I mean, made incredible friends, and, you know, wanted to keep playing there after high school. And we were glad to do that and learn. It was fantastic.
What did you play? What position?
I was all over the place.
A utility guy, huh? Yeah.
Game the first, second, short, third, left, and right, I think.
Wow.
Wasn't known for the bat, so you had to play a couple different positions defensively to add some value there.
Well, Nick, we know you got to run here in a bit, but you know, thank you for all you've done for the state of New Hampshire. You've made an incredible impact on public policy, a positive impact in everyday people's lives. And say it again, the staffers at the State House, staffers on campaigns, the young people working these things, they're what make it go. Nick in particular, he's the best and the brightest around. And if you had any parting remarks for listeners about getting active and engaged in our democracy right now, what would those be in the short time we have you?
Yeah, absolutely. I just think people just pay attention and you know, reach out. Right? I mean, talk to your legislators, talk to your state reps, talk to your state senators, call the offices of the members of Congress, call the governor's office. They work for us, right? I mean, these people are out here, they're public servants, and they're doing a great job. But it's our democracy, it's our society, and if you want to see change, go get it. People, things happen when you participate.
Nick, thanks so much. Appreciate you spending some time with us today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right.
Thank you guys.
Thanks,
see you, Nick.
Nick Taylor of the Queen City. Nick was Senator Feldes' campaign manager in the last election, and happy to have him with us on this edition of Feldes and Kale. We'll take a break. We will continue here on 103.9, 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. Feldes and Kale proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and Wheat Family Automotive. 103.9, 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. Feldes and Kale is back, presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers, along with Weed Family Automotive, serving Concord area families with all their car care needs since 1995. You can make an appointment right now, 603-225-7988, or go online. You can make an appointment there as well at Weed Family Automotive. .com at 124 Store Street in Concord. I think, though, Dan, with the these bills, people become frustrated when they see a lot of these social programs, and I understand that there are families in trouble. I get that, but when you see the debt ceiling going up, and you're going to add more to it, I mean, they call it a $3.5 trillion bill, which is the Build Back Better bill, which is enough, but most people say it's going to be more than that. It's going to be closer to $5.5 or $6 trillion when it's all said and done.
Well, I think even Bernie Sanders the other day said it's going to be less than $3.5 trillion. I mean, he's the chair of the Budget Committee in the Senate. So we'll find out over the next week or two what it's going to look like. You got on one side, you got, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in the House, and then on the other side you have Joe Manchin in the Senate, and they have very diametrically opposing positions, it appears.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens over the next couple of weeks. I mean, the bipartisan infrastructure deal, by the way, which invests in roads, bridges, broadband, coastal resiliency, clean energy projects, all key to New Hampshire, key to the country, ports, intermodal transportation projects. That had 19 Republican votes in the U.S. Senate.
And I don't think any, there aren't too many people that are opposed.
There's not too many
to
people.
That.
I mean, we had Caroline Levin on. She's opposed to it.
Yeah.
But, I think that something like that, needs to get done. The reconciliation package, it sounds like it's going to be trimmed. And the real concern for me about what gets trimmed out of it, I think the two key components three key components that need to be in that, in my view, dealing with children, child tax credits, child care, number one, child tax credits and child care, lifting children out of poverty, making sure people don't have to choose between work and their family, so that you invest in child care. Number two, paid family and medical leave insurance. We're the only country in the industrialized world that doesn't have it, Ken. Makes no sense. And then number three is the long-term care investments. Investing in long-term care, taking care of seniors, taking care of those care workers. In my view, those are the three most important pieces of that reconciliation package. I know that a lot of people that are consider themselves to be Democrats or progressives or what have you would disagree with that. But for me, supporting working families who are getting taking it on the chin right now. A lot of people taking care of their parents or their grandparents. Not having
my grandparents took care of me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, both my parents had to work.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And so, I mean, these are the kind of dynamics that, you know, if you don't have care workers.
And look what happened to me.
Well, it turned out great. It turned out great, Ken.
Oh, yeah.
That's my opinion.
Yeah, that's your opinion.
That's what I said. Like, my opinion, people disagree.
Yeah.
I also have an opinion about how you turned out, and people may disagree.
They may. There are many people that may disagree with that.
So, I mean, look, we'll see what happens, but I think those are critical things that you need to move forward with. And I don't know what the final price tag will be, but certainly we're going to find out over the next couple weeks.
I know President Biden is on the stump today for the bill in Michigan, I believe. And I'll tell you, one person that does not consider himself a Democrat anymore is Andrew Yang. He has left the party. Of course, he was a presidential candidate last time around, along with many others.
And you were in the Yang gang.
What's that?
Were you in the Yang gang?
But, no, I was not in the Yang gang. But you know what? I was in the Tulsi Gabbard gang. If I were to vote for any Democrat last year, it would have been Tulsi Gabbard. Really, I don't know. You know, that will always baffle me how she did not resonate any better than she did anywhere, not just New Hampshire, but anywhere in the country.
Well, there's it's politics is interesting. You never know who's gonna gain traction. I really like Governor Bullock of Montana,
and he
never really caught on or caught fire. And it's you just never know, and you never know. Like, look, you and I've talked about it. Elizabeth Warren was polling in a very strong position in the fall of 2019, going into winter, and then ended up, I think, placing fourth. Behind Klobuchar, Buttigieg, and Bernie Sanders, and then Biden plays fifth.
Yeah.
So you just don't know. You just don't know. And I think she got. You talked about the conversation that we had earlier with Nick about being honest about how you pay for things. I think she got the short end of the stick by actually laying out plans, which you should do, and explain whether you agree with them or not. Right? Whether you agree with them or not, I think it's incumbent upon everybody to say, all right, here's how we're going to pay for it. You had Bernie Sanders just when he was asked how you pay for it, and he just said, we can't afford not to pay for it. You know, he didn't say how he would do anything.
Right.
And Elizabeth Warren laid out how she would pay for things, laid out her plans, and it's a double-edged sword. You're honest. You're engaging in that democratic iterative process with the voters. However, you also lay out something for people to criticize when you do that. And I think she got the short end of the stick in terms of that. I think she should have gotten credit for laying out her plans. And instead, it was blowback. And I think that's part of what resulted in her poll numbers coming down in advance of the primary.
And I think she also had issues with the fact that she perpetuated a lie for many, many years as well, that she was of Native American heritage, and she really is not. You may have more Native American blood in you, I may, than Elizabeth Warren, but she perpetuated that lie for many years. That came out on the campaign trail, and, I think that did her in more than anything else.
Well, that may have been part of it. I don't know. I do think that, you know, again, her background, her truth, how she that's hers, you know. And so I think to whatever degree that people want to criticize that, I think, you know, obviously that I think some of the things that Scott Brown did in the campaign when she ran in Massachusetts in terms of that, I think was. And his supporters was racist. People played that different ways. Obviously, it ended up being kind of a lightning rod issue. I think you're right about that. But I think the upshot, though, is that every time that she spoke, though, she spoke about standing up for working families. She spoke about child care. I think, you know, President Biden speaking about it. These are key issues for the care economy for child care, for taking care of senior citizens, for taking care of long-term care, for taking care of our kids, and making sure people don't have to choose between work and family. We value both, Ken. We ought to value the proposition you shouldn't have to choose between the two, if at all possible. Again, we're taking a leave it to beaver approach in a modern day economy, two parent working households. It doesn't make sense. People ought to have the option to actually work.
No, that's true. I agree with that. Or, we talked about Andrew Yang, and one of the things I thought was worth discussing about Andrew Yang's campaign was his idea of giving every American citizen over the age of 21, I do believe, a monthly stipend of, I don't know, was $1,000 or $1,500 a month as a stipend. And that was one of the things he ran on.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's such a bad idea, but I would do it with the caveat that you eliminate all unemployment and all welfare. That's what I would say.
Well, I think he sort of proposed that when he proposed it, and he mentioned reforming TANF, temporary assistance to needy families, and I don't think that it makes sense to get rid of unemployment insurance, because unemployment insurance is there for insuring you when you lose your job. It's correlated to what you paid into the system, just like Social Security disability insurance is.
I wouldn't get rid of that.
Yeah.
No, don't get rid of Social Security.
Don't get rid of Social Security. Don't get rid of unemployment. Yeah. So I think
it's most of my income.
There you go. There you go. Well, look, I think these are some basic bread and butter issues. I don't think that it's an interesting idea, universal basic income, and I think it's good that Andrew Yang brought that to the national conversation. However, I think some of these baseline things like unemployment insurance, Social Security, blah blah blah, need to stay in place, and in many cases need to reflect the modern situation, what people are facing, which they need to be updated. You can update unemployment insurance to allow for paid family and medical leave insurance, which is what we tried to do in New Hampshire. It was vetoed by Sununu. He opposes paid family and medical leave. You can do that. And you should do it, because if you get diagnosed with, say, if you're a worker and you get diagnosed with cancer, it's not work related. Some cancers are, but let's say the cancer is not work related, so you don't get workers' comp. And you have to take time off for cancer treatment. The small business owner doesn't have the margins to pay you. Well, having a pool where small business owners can actually access and pay that insurance to folks, which is exactly what we proposed, which is why there's over 200 New Hampshire businesses supporting it, because it benefits small businesses, it benefits working families. You shouldn't have to take that hit. And most people, if they take that hit and it's unpaid, withdraw from the labor market. And that's not good for anybody. So it's not good for the small business owner who's losing a trained employee. It's not good for the family. It's not good in the long run for the economy. So paid family and medical leave insurance, a real actual plan, not just saying you're doing it, which is what Governor Sununu did. A real actual plan is critical for our economy. It's critical for taking care of seniors, our caretaking economy. It's critical for combating the opioid and mental health co-occurring epidemics here in New Hampshire and the United States. It's critical for attracting and retaining young working families to New Hampshire. It's critical for so many different reasons. So that's why I say that's one of the key things that I think needs to stay in this reconciliation package. We'll find out in 2 weeks what happens.
That we will. I mean, the Democrats could get it over the finish line by themselves, without one single Republican vote, but it doesn't appear that that's going to happen.
There's a lot of arguing amongst themselves at this point.
There's a lot of factions. That's why I say, are you concerned about the Democrat Party at this point? But we'll talk more about that. We have to take a break. It's Feldis and Kale, presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers, and Weed Family Automotive there at 124 Storrs Street in Concord. Check them out online at WeedFamilyAutomotive.com. Back after these words, 103.9 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Welcome back, 103.9 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Feldison Kale, we are presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers, and Weed Family Automotive, located at 124 Store Street in Concord. You can give them a call and make an appointment right now. Maybe you need an inspection. You know, you can get inspected, get your vehicle inspected, Dan, 3 months ahead of your birthday month.
Well, that's good. That's good.
Yeah, get her done.
Plan ahead. Get her done.
At Weed Family Automotive, 603-225-7988. We mentioned Governor Sununu in the last portion of our program. This is from WMUR.com by political director Adam Sexton. Governor Sununu has publicly called out a fellow State House Republican who he said is, and I quote, detached from reality. State Representative Ken Wyler made headlines in September when Health and Human Services Commissioner Lori Chibonette confronted him at a hearing for spreading misinformation about the COVID-19 vaccine. And now, Governor Sununu has spoken out after continued accusations from Democrats that Wyler had continued to share vaccine misinformation with members of the fiscal committee that he chairs. That misinformation reportedly includes stories that the vaccine is full of live creatures with tentacles and contains 5G technology to control people's thoughts. That from Representative Ken Wyler. And yeah, Sununu blasted Wyler's absurd emails and called on the State House Speaker to remove Wyler from the chairmanship of the fiscal committee.
Well, that's a change in tune, because Governor Sununu, up until these emails, was not taking that approach in terms of Wyler. Now he says, I guess, that he repeatedly called on the speaker to have this guy removed, but there was no indication prior to that. It kind of is what it is. I mean, I think it's par for the course for Governor Sununu, given the headline of the day, kind of trying to be in conformance with the headline of the day. Let's set that aside for a second, because that's a whole other ball of wax, his approach to politics. But let's talk about Kenny Wyler, Representative Wyler, who publicly challenged the commissioner of HHS, which I haven't agreed with on some of her approaches. In fact, I think the fact that early on in the pandemic, Ken, Commissioner Chibonette, in terms of nursing homes, which I've been very critical of, the absence of adequate and routine testing for workers and residents and PPE and supporting our nursing homes and state-regulated nursing homes, having over 1,000 Granite Staters die in our nursing homes under their watch, including 37 veterans in New Hampshire Veterans Home, and then vetoing legislation we put forward to support our nursing homes to do an independent audit and assessment. They didn't want an independent audit of what happened. And not only that, she came out at a press conference and said, I'm going to provide different data on nursing homes to try to change the narrative. The priority shouldn't be changing the narrative. It should be addressing the problem. So I've vehemently disagreed with Commissioner Chibonette and Governor Sununu's handling of nursing homes. However, in terms of providing adequate information and real information about the vaccines, I agree with. And everyone should agree with. And unfortunately, Representative Wyler did not and argued with Commissioner Chibonette at a hearing about basic facts about vaccines. Not only that, then circulated to the fiscal committee, which he chairs, these emails, which you mentioned, you know, some stuff about the vaccine having little animals with tentacles and all kinds of
mind controlling, you know,
it's just wacky. This is the kind of thing we talked about it. We talk about it almost every weekend. Like, look, you know, you're a Republican, I'm a Democrat. We get along great. A lot of people get along great. But you got to focus on baseline facts before you have a conversation about different philosophical approaches to things. If you can't agree that the vaccine's the vaccine, and that it's not little animals with tentacles. I mean, that's a problem. And that's what's going on out there right now. And that's why, in part, the democratic process, small d, is so cantankerous right now. And people are retrenching and they're combating back. And it's like, if you can't agree on basic facts, that is a problem. And I think it's an incredible problem when it comes to a pandemic. And so, yeah, Ken Wilder should be removed from his committee chairmanships. No doubt about it. And it shouldn't have taken an email about little animals with tentacles for Governor Sununu to publicly call on that.
That is Dan Feldes. I'm Ken Kale. It's Feldes and Kale at 1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com, presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. Weed Family Automotive, around since 1995 at 124 Store Street. You can check them out online at WeedFamilyAutomotive.com. Back after these words on WKXL. 1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Feldes and Kale, we're heading down the home stretch. Down the stretch they come. And we are
presented. That's a classic Kale right there.
Presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers and Weed Family Automotive. You can make an appointment right now. Bobby and Charlie standing by, 603-225-7988. We alluded to Red Sox-Yankees in the earlier portion of our show when we were chatting with your campaign manager for the last campaign, Nick Taylor. And it's going to be quite a battle tonight at Fenway. And it comes down to Red Sox-Yankees in the National League, the wild card. Is the Cardinals and the Dodgers. Can you imagine the Dodgers have won 107 games, and one game could eliminate them from further play this season?
It is. There's a reason why they call it the wild card.
Yes.
That's wild. I mean, that's wild. I mean, how it all shook out on both the National League and the American League, it's very interesting. And you know, winning 107 games and not being assured like a full playoff spot is just it's just the way it happened.
I think one of the things and the collective bargaining agreement between the players and Major League Baseball, the Players Association of Major League Baseball, is coming up, and there's a lot of issues to discuss, like the universal designated hitter,
right,
which a lot of people favor. I'm not in favor of that, but a lot of people favor it. It's going to go that way, folks. There is going to be a universal DH next season, I'm sure. The other thing is, instead of just one wild card game, there's a proposal out there or something that will be discussed, two out of three instead of, you know, just a one game
scenario. I'd support that.
Scenario.
What do you think?
Yeah. I know. I would definitely support that. I would definitely support that.
I think we have a vote.
Yeah, and you know, the Yankees and Red Sox, they you know, both finished 92-70.
Yeah.
You know, that American League East was an amazing race down to the final day of the season. It all came down to the final day, and Yankees and the Red Sox prevailed. As many times as both teams tried to give it away, they wound up getting in the wild card with 92 wins. And it's, as they say, it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. And the wins in April count just as much as the ones in September and October. So you got to win early as well. So it should be a good one. We're recording this on a Tuesday, and that's when the game is being played. And, of course, I'm picking the Red Sox, being the homer that I am and always have been.
You got to pick the Red Sox.
And who would have thought? We only have a few seconds left here, but we have to reflect a little bit. Who would have thought that Mac Jones would outplay Tom Brady in that Sunday night game?
And he did. Outplayed it, no doubt about it. I mean, he was asked at the press conference. Bill Belichick, I saw it on Monday, the press conference, didn't stay up for it. But Belichick didn't give as much kudos, I think, to Mac Jones as he could have, and kind of Belichick style,
exactly.
By the way. But exactly. But Mac Jones outplayed Brady.
There's no doubt. There's no doubt that he did, and the Patriots came within inches of winning that game. But anyway, I think it's a good sign for the future. We can't be too discouraged about that. Dan, another great performance by you, and we'll be
you
back
too.
Soon right here, Feldes and Kale, 1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com.